Ah, yes. That is the unruffled beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. And that signals 8 p.m. Thursday and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, and it's right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm your host tonight, Mary Edgerton, along with an ensemble of gifted hosts. Hank Rubicek, our founder and the producer of the show. Greg Audell, who will always appear with Floyd the Wonder Dog. And Warren Holloman, our master of wellness. Not to mention our extended family of guests and guest hosts. Our team goes beyond hosts and storytellers. Yes, we do need a production engineer and media director, and that is Tatiana Gago, whom you will hear from later in the hour. Well, folks, tonight is the first night of KPFT's Winter Fun Drive, a time when you can tell us that you like what we do and we should keep doing it. As a Pacifica station, we are all about listener sponsorship, and in a world where free speech is questioned, KPFT is more important than ever. So give us a call. Do it right now during the program at 713-526-5738 to show the world you are an active story listener and pledge your generous donation to one of our steadfast volunteers. I'll thank you on the air with your first name only, unless you say otherwise. And if you don't like the phone, simply go to kpft.org, then to donations, choose a form of payment, then scroll to So What's Your Story as the show you wish to support. We are a Houston first, and we aim to be around for a very long time. Hey, guys, if the other guy won't do it, just pick up that phone and give us a call, 713-526-5738. Together with our guest storytellers that we bring on the show every week, we celebrate the magic and the power of storytelling. Speaking of celebrating, today is Valentine's Day and we celebrate love. Actually, Hank started with some love-themed stories, funny and sad, last week. So let's call this Valentine's Day Part 2. I have read that exchanging of cards became a tradition back in the Middle Ages. Tonight, here we are at the studio bringing you So What's Your Story? Live on Valentine's Day, and we are celebrating it with an exchange of personal stories about romance. I welcome tonight Rob Hallett, Ruth Wentz, Jason Wentz, Sneha Desai, Eric Heen, Kelly Keltz, and a new guest, Rachel Chadwick. Thank you guys for being here. Well, where shall we start? Where do you start? You start at the beginning, of course. How does romance begin? First, you need to be introduced to the other person, okay? So, Rob, and everybody knows Rob Hallett in Radio Land because he gave us a story about his attempt to be an astronaut in NASA. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Mary. Never lived that down.
Definitely never. So why don't you lead off? So, Rob, how do you start meeting people to date?
Well, this story requires a little background, so I need to give a little background of my where I come from in order that the story to make sense. So my mom is Jewish and my dad is Presbyterian. Our household was fairly open about religion. We didn't think anything of it. Growing up, we would go to various bat mitzvahs. We would go to Jewish weddings. And then on my dad's side, we'd kind of do his thing as well. The decision was made not by us, but by our parents, that we would be raised as Presbyterians, meaning I had a baptism, I had a confirmation, I went to Sunday school. We weren't very religious, but we just kind of grew up thinking we went to dad's church. My mom would come along, and we didn't know any better or think anything of it. So I grew up thinking that, you know, we were Presbyterian, and that was all fine. So fast forward to later in life when I went to law school, and, you know, I'm single in mid-20s. And there is this older Jewish woman named Eleanor, who's in her 60s, who retired and chose to go back to law school. That's what she wanted to do. And she was kind of our den mother. And she also relished in the role of Yenta, because she was a grandmother. All her kids were married, and she could kind of matchmake us. And we got to know each other over the year and spent some time talking with her. And as I got to know her a little better, I said, you know, Eleanor, I've always been interested in the Jewish religion. And she said, well, Rob, why would that be interesting that you would say that? And I said, well, my mom's Jewish. And I noticed the, you know, an eyelid kind of furl up. And she said, well, did your mom convert and marry your dad? And I said, no. You know, my mom was Jewish, and I think her mom was Jewish. And she said, this is very interesting. And she said, what is your mom's maiden name? I thought that was kind of an odd request. And she got her little notebook out, and I wrote it, and she made me spell it, right? And I thought, where is this going, right? And she didn't really offer anything at that point. She just slammed the notebook shut and said, thank you. I'll be back with you. And about 2 weeks later, I saw her, you know, in the coffee room, and she flagged me down and said, Rob, come here. I need to talk to you. And she said, I checked you out with the rabbi. And I'm like, what do you mean you checked me out with the rabbi? And she said, you know, I kind of ran that name by the rabbi, and he knew your grandma and says, you're legit. As I didn't know I wasn't legit. What do you mean I'm legit? And she said, you know, I mean, this is a matriarchal religion, so it flows through the mother. And I said, well, Eleanor, but you have to understand. I mean, I never had a bar mitzvah, and I was confirmed, you know, and I've been going to Sunday school. She said, we don't care at all. You're Jewish. And I said, how can that be? And she said, your mom is Jewish and her mom's Jewish. And by the way, you probably don't know this. The rabbi knows this. Your family goes all the way back to the home country. Like, we've got books on this, and you are absolutely legit. And I said, wow, this is kind of shocking. But I'm still not understanding why this is at all relevant. And she's like, you're not getting this, are you? And I said, no, I'm really not getting it. And she said, you're a unicorn. I said, what? What are you talking about? And she said, you know, there's a small Jewish community here, and, you know, the kids generally go to Hebrew school, and, you know, at some point it's cute. The Levi kids are going to date the Cohen kids, and they're going to go to the middle school dance, and by high school, you know, they're broken up. And we in the community are just like, oh, if we could only find some new blood that's, you know, legitimately Jewish. I mean, the girls would kill to date someone who they haven't been going to Hebrew school for 8 years. I mean, you know, we kind of dream that there's going to be someone, boy or girl, who's going to appear and be legitimately Jewish as fresh blood, right? And here you are, right? And not only that, but you're single and you're in law school, right? And I said, okay, I guess I kind of see where this is going. This is interesting. And she said, do you have any objections to dating Jewish girls? And I said, absolutely not. Never really thought of that. And she said, okay, I'll put the word out, right? It kind of sounds ominous, putting the word out. I didn't really think much about it, right? And literally that night went home, and my roommate said, dude, the Old Testament's been calling. I'm like, what are you talking about? And this is in the days that we had answering machines, so you could see like the red light blinking. And he's like, it's just been insane. I stopped answering the phone. I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, you need to start from the beginning and go through the messages, right? And I said, well, tell me. And he said, well, I've been writing them down. We've had two Sarahs, an Esther, a Ruth, and I even think a Bathsheba. Is that a real name? I think there was a Bathsheba who called, right? So he said, you know, they're leaving messages, and they're kind of forward too. I mean, so he said, you got to call one back, because I want to know where this is going. So I picked a Sarah who, you know, I could read his writing, and I phoned and talked to this very nice gal, and she said, yeah, you know, sorry for being kind of direct. My mom made me call, and Eleanor phoned and said that you were this, you know, poor Jewish boy that didn't know anyone. So, you know, can you come over for Shabbat on Friday night to my parents' house? And I'm like, yeah, I guess I could do that. Sure. Right. And so I had a fairly full dating calendar for most of that year. I wish I could say that I married one of those girls and was happy ever after. I didn't, but I had a lot of fun. And I guess the moral of the story is you just never know where you're going to meet somebody.
Well, that's the beginning. But I have to say, I have one thing for you as an answer to all that, and that is Lou Bega's Mambo No. 5. A little bit.
bit of Bathsheba in my life, a little bit of Esther by my side, a little bit of Sarah's all I need, a little bit of Ruth is what I see.
Thank you so much for that, Mary.
Hey, when you told me that story, that song just came to my mind. I said, I've got to get that and change the words. Tatiana, you're in college. What do you think?
I think that was a really good story. And thank you, Mary, for that jingle. And to our listeners, if you want to keep the lights on and the story's coming, you need to show us your love by calling 713-526-5738 or going to our website or go to our website, kpft.org, to donate the support of our storytelling show.
Oh, it would be just terrible if the power went out because we couldn't pay the bills before a story was finished.
And if you donate, I just might tell you a story.
Ooh, go for it, guys. Go for it, guys. I want to hear her story. Now, Rob, you mentioned Ruth, so why don't you introduce our Ruth?
All right. Dr. Ruth, I don't know if you go by that, but she's got a wonderful story with her husband, Jason, and I know you're going to enjoy it, so please take it away.
So, did you have Abraham, Moses, and Adam calling?
Not quite, Mary. My story is a little different, and in fact, I have two versions of it.
I see you did bring a guest. A guest brought a guest. I hope this has a double happy ending.
Well, let me just start by telling you that there's this guy I met in college named Jason, and he's sitting right beside me. Jason, do you think we should start?
Sure, although a donation would help us make sure that you get to hear the whole story from beginning to end.
All right. Well, it was the fall of 1990, and I was a sophomore at UT in a small liberal arts program. I know it was the fall because my girlfriend and I were fasting for Yom Kippur, which made us not exactly the life of the party we were attending. Jason was at the party, and I thought he was pretty cool. He wore an army jacket, and he had a shock of unruly red hair. He was a DJ at the college radio station. He was talking about a movie at the student union and invited me to go with him that weekend. I was excited. It was a date.
I was shy, painfully shy, and I had no self-esteem. I figured if I had any chance of getting a girlfriend, I had to become friends with her first and sneak my way in. It never occurred to me that a girl would be interested in actually going on a date with me. So I tried to set up this movie excursion where she wouldn't have to worry I was trying to go on a date with her, that there were other friends from our program there, and it was just casual. Of course, I'd have to manage to sit next to her.
When I found out it wasn't a date, that others were coming too, I was so embarrassed. I told people I was going on a date with this guy, and it ended up it was just a group outing to an interesting movie.
But my plans were all falling apart. I begged so many of my friends to go to this movie. I explained that they needed to go because Ruth was going to be there, and it had to be casual and cool. But one by one, they kept coming up with other plans and dropping out. I now faced the frightening scenario of being at the movie alone with Ruth, like an actual date.
Saturday night came, and I pictured Jason and his friends going to the movie. It didn't seem like he'd miss me much. One of my sweet mates asked me to go out with him and a friend to dinner, so I went with them instead.
Despite my best efforts, none of my friends went with me to the movie. And then things got worse. Ruth didn't show up either. I watched the movie alone, distraught. A few days later, one of my other plans had come to fruition, my offer to walk her home from studying at the library at nights.
He lived in the dorm across from the library. He told me he was an insomniac, so I should call him to walk me back to my co-op late at night, just to keep me safe.
As we sat talking in Ruth's room that night, the subject of her not coming to the movie came up.
I said, well, I thought it was a date, but when I found out your friends were coming, I figured it really didn't matter if I came or not.
A date? No, she couldn't know my plan yet. That could ruin everything. So I responded, a date? No, it wasn't a date.
No, it wasn't a date, he practically shouted at me. He clearly had no interest in dating me. Oh, I felt so humiliated. I had to be alone right away. I told him I was tired and that he should leave.
I got back to the dorm and started telling my friend what had happened. And as I was describing it, I realized, wait, she thought it was a date. That means she would have said yes to a date. I immediately called her, but she didn't pick up. I guess she was tired. I called her again and again, but she never seemed to answer. I left messages on her answering machine and with her suite mates. She never called back.
I was busy dating guys who asked me out, not made me feel like I was a leper.
My other strategies were failing, too. I used to sit outside after philosophy class and chat with my friends, knowing she had class right after, and I would see her and talk to her on the way in. But I no longer saw her.
I couldn't bear to see him.
I was getting desperate. Months went by. She wouldn't answer my calls.
Ugh, he was always calling.
I wasn't running into her on campus anymore.
I would walk a different way to enter on the other side, so I wouldn't have to see him.
And then an opportunity arose. I knew her favorite band was The Replacements. I was working at the college radio station and managed to finagle 2 tickets to their show. But how could I invite her if she wouldn't take my calls? Days went by, the date of the show was approaching, when I was talking to my friend outside the student pharmacy. He mentioned that he'd just seen her head into another building, and I realized she must be heading into her anthropology class. I looked at my watch. I had just a couple of minutes before class started. I ran over and made it through the doors of the small auditorium just as class was supposed to start. And fortunately, the professor hadn't entered yet. But where was she? I scanned the room. Damn! What a goody-goody! She was sitting way down in front.
Class was about to start, and we were quieting down. Jason's friend Karen was sitting next to me, and she had just said the oddest thing, that Jason had missed me on Tuesday. What was Tuesday? Valentine's Day? That was just weird. And next thing I know, someone is loudly stomping down the stairs all the way to the front of the auditorium.
And so I clomped in my boots all the way down to the front of the room and sat on the floor next to her. I said, "Hey."
"Hey."
"You've been hard to get a hold of. I have 2 tickets from the radio station to see The Replacements. You want to go?"
Heck yeah, I wanted to go to The Replacements concert. I was still confused about what Jason really wanted, but I guessed I would give him another chance. Maybe it was okay if he didn't want to date me. Maybe he would turn out to be a good friend. The night of the show came. The floor was packed and the crowd was pretty rambunctious. He asked me if I wanted to go into the mosh pit to be in front of the stage. I said yes.
I asked her where we would meet if we got separated in the sweaty mob.
I took a risk. It felt right. I had to know. I looked him in the eye and clutched his hand in mine. I said defiantly, "They won't separate us."
We held hands the entire show.
And they haven't separated us since.
That's such a wonderful story. And to our listeners, we introduced Ruth Wentz a little while ago. This is Jason Wentz, and he's also been on the show before. But they've been on separately, and now I know they should always be on together, not separately. That duet was delightful. My listeners, let us know how much you really liked that story. Call in a donation for the show. We let you hear it to the end, but we need that donation now. 713-526-5738. Let's keep storytelling alive on KPFT for our next storyteller. And our next storyteller is new to the show. We wouldn't want the power to go out on her for the first time on the show, definitely. Rachel, welcome to the show. So Rachel Lyle Chadwick owns RLC Advertising and is here for the first time. Rachel, welcome. What'd you think of that story?
Well, thank you, Mary, for that warm welcome. I just love that Jason didn't give up.
So how about you, Rachel? What was your experience in the world of romance?
Well, my story was actually very different. If you remember, Mary, before the internet, there was something called blind dates.
Oh, yeah. I have painful memories. My one and only blind date was in college, and it did not go well. He was supposed to be a physics major like me, and the build-up from the girl who did not want to go out with him, and he ended up being a Chinese history major. So tell me, how'd your friend convince you to go out with this person, and what happened next?
Well, it was an interesting story. So a year before I went on this blind date. I had broken up with a guy, and it was a very bad breakup. And I spent the next year just being kind of a bitter person, and I didn't even enjoy being around myself. I was quite unpleasant, and my friend called me and said, "I want you to go out with this guy. He's really nice." And I said, "Oh, okay, so he has no personality." And she said, "You know, he's funny." And I said, "So he's not cute." And that kind of went on, and finally she said, "You know what, Rachel? You're a jerk. You're not a beauty queen." And she was right. She said, the guy's nice, and you need nice. So go out with the guy. So I finally agreed and said, okay, set up the date. So she set it up for a Tuesday night. And I was a single mom at the time. And, you know, if you're a single parent, you know that getting your parents to babysit is a big deal. And so you want to get the maximum value of that babysitting time. So I double booked myself for the evening. I was going to have a drink with this loser at 6 o'clock. And then I was going to go meet up with some friends at 8 o'clock. So the evening comes, I go get to the restaurant, and I have been dating guys that are, you know, 6'4" and a head full of hair and just guys and manly men. And my date is 5'10" and bald and kind of round.
I presume he's not listening.
No, love you, dear. But so I get there and I think, really? And he's also wearing a plaid jacket with a checkered shirt. And, you know, I'm just going to give a quick little PSA. If you are a man over the age of 40, and especially if you're bald, if you are not trimming your eyebrows, you need to be trimming your eyebrows. So this is what my date is. And I sit down, and as the evening is going on, he was such a nice guy. And we had wonderful conversation, and I'm like, okay, you know, change the outfit, trim the eyebrows. This is good. We can do this. And so my friends that I was supposed to meet up with later in the evening start texting me, and where are you? And I don't want to say that I'm on a blind date. And I'm like, well, I'm at a work dinner. I'll catch up with you guys shortly. And so the evening keeps going on. And before you know it, it's 10 o'clock and they're actually closing the restaurant. And we're still talking and having a wonderful evening. And then he said, you know, it was time to go. And I said, you know, I really enjoyed tonight. And he said, I did too. He said, I'd like to see you again. And I said, yeah, you know, shoot me a text and when we can make a plan. And he pulls out his phone, gets on Open Table and says, how about 7 o'clock Saturday night at Stella Sola? And I said, okay. And he said, great, we have a reservation. And I thought, oh my God, he's an adult. You know, there was no game. There was no playing around. He genuinely liked me and wanted to see me again. So I was very excited. So the evening ends and I go meet up with my friends. And one of them, I had this on again, off again relationship for about 10 years. And so the evening's ending and, you know, he was asking what I was going to be doing. And I said, I'm going home. I've met somebody. And he said, when? You know? And I said, just recently. And that's it. I'm done. And that was in January of 2011. He proposed in May of 2011, and we got married in October of that year.
Amazing.
Yes.
Amazing.
I told my mom, I'm a closer. We're going to get this deal done, which we did. And it's been, you know, we've been together for 8 years, and on that same January date, we still go out and celebrate that wonderful blind date that we had.
I have to tell you a little secret. After you told me this story the first time, I trimmed my eyebrows. But that was fabulous. Anybody else here meet on a blind date? How about you, Eric?
Not a blind date. It was an internet date. But
oh, well, that's it. Isn't that kind of the 21st century version of a blind date?
I guess you could say so.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Well, my internet dates didn't go well either. If anybody was at the Moth, they heard about a few of them. But speaking of the internet, we could use some love over the ether. This is Mary Edgerton on So What's Your Story? Today is Valentine's Day. It's the start of our 2019 fundraising. Please log on to kpft.org, find the donate button, and at the end choose So What's Your Story as the show that you want to show support for here on KPFT Pacifica Radio. 90.1 FM on your dial here in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville, and kpft.org live streaming from anywhere in the ether. Hey, Tatiana, tell us what's going on in this huge range of storytelling venues offered in our wonderful city.
Well, range is right. And let's start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, which is a great place to learn about the art of telling thanks to the amazingly supportive members. They meet the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emanuel, located at 1500 Sunset. The next monthly swap will be on February 26th. So visit the Guild's website at www.HoustonStorytellers.org for information about upcoming events. And while you're there, listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008, all listed on the menu under Radio Program. There are over 450 of them, so you better get started. And if you don't own a radio, that's not an excuse, because you can listen to us stream live on KPFT.org and on Facebook Live. You can visit us also on our So What's Your Story Facebook page and share it with all of your friends. And since today is Valentine's Day, share it with your lovers. And we'd love it if you like us when you leave. So What's Your Story is also on YouTube. And we are really all over the place when you think about it. And our friends at The Moth have a show at Warehouse Live, usually on the second Tuesday of the month. Though I understand that in March it will be on the third Tuesday. Keep in mind, because you'll enjoy some spectacular stories there, and you will get to know more of Houston storytelling community. I promise, once you go to The Moth, it will be one of your favorite things to do. I went on Tuesday, actually, and I can definitely vouch for that. We had amazing stories. Incredible. And last Tuesday, the show was sold out, and our very own Mary Edgerton was the Story Slam winner. Congratulations. You'll have to bring that one back to us sometime in the future.
Oh, thanks, Tatiana. So was that your first time there?
It was.
Oh.
And I'm going to go back next month.
It's a lot of fun. I had a really exciting night there.
Yeah, and you deserved the win. That was a really good story that you shared.
Thank you. Oh, Hank, you want to say anything before I give Radioland a heads up about next week?
Do you want to say something, Dr. Rubicher?
I do. Hi, Mary. Again, congratulations on that great story on Tuesday. So proud of you.
Thank you.
Really, really great. And make sure, like I told you in an email, buy that story so we can put it on YouTube.
I will.
All right, great. You know, next week and the week after, we're still on our fun drive mode, and all I can say to our marvelous listeners is that, unfortunately, we just can't leave it to the other guy. We need you to help us, because, you know, in 2008, when this show started as an open journal, it was once a month, and I was told by the powers that be at the time, you know, Hank, we like you and you're good, but I don't think anybody's going to really tune in. Well, you know what? Surprise. Not only did they, but I got calls saying we want this every week, and we've been doing it every week since 2012, and this show is really an icon for community radio. We've had stories about meeting your father for the first time, a woman who told the story about the murder of her daughter in Detroit in 1979. I'll never forget that. I hosted that night. We've had stories about trajectories and shifts in lives that can only come from very real stories in very real form. And this show does something remarkable. It really does. So I'm going to want everybody to give us a call next week during the show, as I'd like them to do right now at 713-526-5738, JAM, KPFT. And let us know that you want us to keep storytelling alive, because our inventory route is not guaranteed. You know, KPFT has got a great program list, and no one is guaranteed. We need proof that people want us to stay alive, and my God, we sure do want to. So thanks for the opportunity, Mary. But again, just wanted everybody to know that we're still in fun drive mode. If you don't want to give us a call at 713-526-5738, please go to kpft.org, then to donations, tell us how you want to pay, and make sure that you scroll to So What's Your Story as the show that you want to support. Get online, get in line. I don't care if you're out of line, even if you're in a lineup. We just want you to do the best you can to help support us. Thank you.
Show us that love. Show us that love. So, Tatiana, what is happening next week?
Well, next week we're going to have Greg Audell having another set of storytellers, only on KPFT Pacifica 90.1 FM Houston. And to everyone out there, we want to hear from you about your program ideas or comments for anyone. They just shoot us an email at story@kpft.org, and I promise we will get back to you.
Ah, yes, we will. And we want to hear from you, and we want to receive from you. It's just the way our station operates. Well, we have the second half of our loving show to bring on now. My earlier guest talked about meeting and falling in love, and it seems as though everything magically fell into place. Now, how about you, Sneha? Listeners, you may remember Sneha Desai was our guest a few months ago talking about training to be a therapist, and how she found her wonderful dog, Coda.
Yep, that's me. Coda is still the star of an Instagram page. It's called Coda the Canine Yoda. Go follow him if you want to see an extremely cute dog posting every day about me. But Mary, this story is actually about someone else in my life. So, Bollywood, do you watch Bollywood movies?
I love Bollywood movies.
Yeah, so Bollywood is like the Hollywood of India, and it's very well known for churning out dramatic love stories. Half of them cliche and half of them unrealistic. Now, the cliche ones usually go this way. Boy meets girl, boy asks girl out, girl rejects boy, boy pursues her, woos her with song and dance, girl falls in love, villains step in and oppose the union, a huge fight follows, tears are shed, and then miraculously a happy ending. My story is somewhat like that, but with a few amusing details and some twists and turns. So when I met this young man in 2011, there was no love at first sight. However, when we kept bumping into each other over and over, this man decided he was very attracted to me and should ask me out. And I immediately rejected him. He was younger than me. And that is a big no-no in the culture I come from. So no thank you. I was not interested in producing any dramatic movies in my life. But of course, he had to woo me. No song and dance, because that kind of talent did not exist. But boy, oh boy, plenty of pressure and persistence. And just like the female lead in a Bollywood movie, I relented. Now comes the actual drama. You know, when the plot thickens after an intermission? When his parents found out that he was dating an older woman by stalking his and my Facebook accounts, all hell broke loose. And within 24 hours of this knowledge, they either hired a private investigator or did a background check on me. Either way, whatever service they used, it was bad. Because they were inaccurately informed that my mom and I were in a business of marrying people for money and divorcing them after 3 years. And I just wanted to know, where is all that money and where are all our ex-husbands, right? No idea, but the script was getting wild. Then came the accusation that I had performed black magic on their son in order for him to fall in love with me. There can be no other explanation, right? So they asked him to perform some other rituals in order to negate those powers. You know, things like wearing a ring with a certain gemstone, drinking water out of a copper cup, waking up before sunrise to give some of that water to birds or something like that. I'm not sure. But nope, that never happened. Then they called him to say that he should refrain from eating or drinking anything I feed him because they believed I was poisoning him. Just so everyone knows, he's still alive and fairly healthy. He's not dead.
We saw him.
I even remember them sending him a Get Well Soon Hallmark greeting card with a handwritten note to the effect, "We know you're suffering, but we are here waiting for you to heal." I had a wonderful laugh that day, comic relief in a dramatic movie sort of thing. At one point, his mother called me and told me these exact words. "You have captured a child for sex." Professionally, I'm a psychologist. So she even threatened to call the psychology board to have my license revoked because apparently I had misused my hypnotism skills and hypnotized an individual for sex. And I would like to clarify to the listeners that I've never studied hypnosis and I have no idea how to do any of that. I would also like to clarify that her son, who she claimed was a child, was a whopping 28-year-old man, completely capable of having his own children at that time. Then she told her son that once I became fat, he will be attracted to younger and skinnier women, so to spare himself the trouble. I was happy to know that she didn't think I was fat already, you know. The simple joys, I guess. She also claimed that I had reached menopause already and would never be able to satisfy her son, you know, in the bedroom. And I'm not sure how all that works, but just let me tell you this. I was in my 30s and not yet reached menopause. This went on for months and months, and despite this drama, this man and I became very serious about each other and got engaged in 2013 to be married in 2014. During this time, his parents went on a religious journey to pray for the demise of our relationship, showed up at our door unannounced all the way from India to the United States, stalked their son's workplace, called him and emailed him incessantly with the same message each time. She's out to get your money. She's using you. She will divorce you in 3 years. As the wedding date approached, they even got more aggressive in their approaches. They called every single extended family member and forbade them from attending the wedding. We were even informed by a well-meaning aunt that they had booked their tickets from India to come to the wedding venue to stop it from happening. Luckily for us, we were getting married in New Orleans, where the police protection is recommended and easy to find, so we were kind of chill about that. To our relief, they did not come. To our disappointment, not one of his family members came. It's been 4 years and a few months. And my husband and I are doing just fine. I did not divorce him after 3 years. He does not have the kind of money that his parents claimed I married him for. I have put on weight, but he's still here. I've not yet reached menopause, and I don't think that's going to happen for a long time. His parents stopped harassing us, but they're not a part of our lives, and our relationship did turn out like an extremely dramatic Bollywood movie, but I'm hopeful that this is our happily ever after.
That must be terribly difficult. I think it's very sad when families cannot see beyond the end of their nose sometimes, and they can't let their own children grow up. And I have to say, my father did not speak to my sister for 10 years after she got married, and it wasn't until she had a child that he decided to finally give in and meet her again. It's hard.
It was very difficult, and there was actually a time where I did wonder if I was going to die, like if they would hire somebody to kill me or something. But what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So I think that we've both emerged really strong out of this whole ordeal.
That's very true, and for those of you listeners who can't see them, they really are a wonderfully strong couple.
Thank you so much.
And I've met them with Coda. He was here last time. So we've heard a lot about beginnings. Anybody ever hit a time after those first few wonderful years when you want to spice it up a little? Okay, don't everybody talk at once.
Mary?
Oh, Eric?
I happen to have a story about just that.
Let's go for it. It's family time, Eric.
All right. Well, my wife, Katie, once told me that I should be more romantic. So I thought about that, and I thought, nah. But then one day, this romance issue just exploded. It was when Katie went out of town to visit her parents for a week. I was out in our storeroom cleaning out some clutter, and way in a back corner, I unearthed a box full of romance novels. I felt like my wife was cheating on me, like she needed some fictional romance heroes to fulfill her needs. But then it struck me. There, at my fingertips, lay a treasure trove of forbidden female secrets. And I had an entire week to decode them. I took that box down to my living room, and over the next 7 days, whenever I had a chance, I'd study these things to learn once and for all what it is that women want from men. It was the most baffling week of my life. Thumbing through the first book, I come to the scene where some guy named Magnus swoops this woman named Elizabetha into his arms and spins her around in the moonlight. So I make a note of that. And I practice this swooping maneuver to use on Katie. I even used our basset hound to practice. Pretty soon I started noticing something funny about the dialogue in these things. Now, people haven't spoken like this for 600 years. Men are using words like cherub and quenchless inferno. So I made a note of that. I began learning this archaic love language. And I noticed on every single book I looked at, on the last page, every one of them contained the phrase eternal bliss, like it was a requirement. And for some reason, they'd always throw a little bit of French in there. It's out of the blue. Mon chéri, la j'attem, blah, blah, blah. So I learned a little bit of French. And then there was the sex, or as they called it, erotica. Now, these weren't books from way back in the 1950s. These were contemporary. These were lurid. And the men in these books set the bar pretty high. And they wouldn't just go right in for the big shebang. These guys carried on forever with nuzzling and nibbling and caressing and massage. Forever! In this one book, some fireman named Devlin went on nuzzling and nibbling for 20 pages. So I made a note of that. At night time, I practiced nuzzling and nibbling on my pillow.
Not your basset hound.
By the end of the week, I was ready to dazzle Katie with my newfound romance skills. Sunday night, I meet her at the door, long-stemmed rose clenched in my teeth, shirt unbuttoned halfway down. I hand her the rose and I say, "Welcome home, my cherub." I lead her into the living room and I swoop her into my arms. Now, this hurt my back, but the pain made me feel like a martyr for love. I hobbled over to the sofa and I plopped her down and I sat next to her. I said, "Moi, j'ai que t'es la de la. La doodle la swan." She looked at me and she said, "I see you found my romance novels." Right then, I gave up the charade. I'm not a romance hero. I'm just me. I'll never be able to swoop her into my arms like Magnus, speak French like Pierre, or go on in bed for 20 pages like Devlin. And Katie scooted up to me. She said, "Eric, I wouldn't trade you for all those romance heroes in the world." Eternal bliss.
Yes. That's so sweet. Although, I could have borrowed a few of those books from my former husbands. But that was very, very sweet. For both of you, you for trying and her for loving you just the way you are. And that Montana French accent, priceless.
Unbeatable.
Oh, yes. So, Kelly Kells, as always, you are so patient and have waited all evening to tell us your story. And last time we were together, we listened to each other's stories, and we just said, "Oh, Kelly has to be the closer." And this time we listened to each other's stories, and we said, "Kelly has to be the closer." So, do you have a story to wrap up our evening?
Yes, and mine is extra special because it combines history and love and courage. it's a privilege and an honor to be able to tell this story about my grandparents, Robert McGee and Zephyrine Taylor, better known as Zephyrine McGee, or as I call them, Nana and Granddaddy. Nana and Granddaddy were both born in the South, West Virginia and Mississippi, respectively. They were born after slavery, which seems obvious, but it's not for some people. I remember a group of kids asking me if my grandparents were slaves. A lot of times we don't talk about these things, especially to kids, because we feel like we shouldn't taint their image of the past. But really not talking about it is just dangerous. So they were born after slavery. And after slavery, there was this 80-year period of legal segregation. And Nana and Granddaddy were born right in the middle of this period of time, during a time that we call, or history calls, the Great Migration, which was the movement of 6 million African Americans out of the South and into the North. I remember reading about this in school, but I never put it in context that this applied to my very own grandparents. And you know, before my grandparents passed, I sat down with both of them to get their stories, and neither one of them mentioned taking part in this Great Migration. They didn't have that perspective. It was just their life. And they just knew that they had to get up out of Dodge. The South was unbearable. There was legal segregation. Some people believe that this period might have been worse than slavery in some ways, in terms of being on the outside and dealing with a group of hostile people. Also, after slavery, there was no money in the Black community. There was never any reparations to jumpstart this group of people. There were no Black businesses. The only available jobs for Black people were ones that were pretty much an extension of slavery. My grandfather was a sharecropper. That was his first job, and at a young age, he didn't have the luxury of finishing school because he had to work. He was a sharecropper. And this was not the kind of lifestyle he wanted, to be a free man and basically still be treated like a slave. This period of time is considered worse than slavery by some people in terms of dealing with the lack of job opportunities, the starvation because of that, and worse, the lynchings, the daily lynchings, all to enforce white supremacy and intimidate Black people through racial terrorism. Some of this was even professionally photographed and sold as postcards, which were popular souvenirs. And this is what I mean by legal segregation. Lynchings were so commonplace that Black Americans had no faith in the law or faith in due process in the judicial system. So as you can see, my grandparents had to get up out of the South, them and about 6 million others. It was a push-pull effect that got Black people to the North. Obviously, they were pushed out of the South because of the way things were. But the North pulled Black folks there because it was a promise of better education, better housing, better jobs in factories like in the steel mills, railroads, meatpacking plants, and the automobile industry. The promise of all of these things is what pulled Black people to the North. And so Robert McGee and Zephyrine Taylor both migrated to Chicago. They were both working at Campbell Soup when they met. And so Granddaddy, he was a ladies' man. Really, he was just a people person. He wasn't ever afraid to talk to anybody of any race. He had this wonderful gift of gab. He would always break off into some story, surprise, surprise. And he was always telling jokes. So he was just a people person. And here he is living his best life, living in Chicago, Illinois, working at Campbell Soup. And so to give you a little BTS, some behind the scenes at Campbell Soup, when they were off the clock, Granddaddy had all the ladies flocking to him, and they all believed that he was some mystical fortune teller. He would take them by their palms and he would read their palm. And when my Nana would recall this part of the story, she made it seem like this whole fortune teller thing was his shtick, his, you know, gimmick to get the attention of all the ladies. But sometimes I wonder, well, maybe he was for real. Maybe he was the real deal because he chose the right lady. Shoot, I wouldn't be here. In fact, he made a lot of the right choices in life, and together their dreams came true. I believe just because the simplicity of their dream, and to me, they are such the success story. And sometimes I don't like to talk about their successes because it paints an image that because they did it, the times must have been good, and that everybody else could also do it, and that's just not true. So they met in Chicago, Campbell Soup, and they ended up moving together to Detroit, Michigan, where they got married. And that's when they had kids, my mom being one. My grandfather started working for Chrysler, where he retired from. My grandmother was a janitor in the school system, where she retired from. My grandfather actually went back to school and got his GED probably in his 60s or 70s. It was after he retired. He did it just because he wanted to. And because of all of that, I say that my grandparents were a success. That despite all odds against them, they accomplished the dream. And it's just the simplicity of their dream that's so beautiful to me, which is a testament to their character. They were like Zen masters of black folks. If you ask a lot of people today, what's your dream? You're going to get a lot of wild responses. My grandparents wanted a job with a living wage so that they could buy a home, take care of home, raise their kids, make sure that their kids ate, that they were educated, and they did all of that. They had three kids, like I said, my mom being one. But one thing that my grandfather would always say, and I have to share it with you all, one thing that he would say, Dabai, that was his dialect, like saying their boy instead of saying your name. Me and my friends actually still say this to each other. But he would say, Dabai, when it comes time for you to get married, when it comes time for a wedding, don't go spending it on some grand ceremony. You could use that money to invest into your family, your home, your kids, yourself. He said, Dabai, when me and your Nana got married, we went down to the Justice of the Peace. And for our honeymoon, Dabai, we went to the street corner and had a hot dog and a beer. And that was their humble beginnings together. And just because it's grand doesn't mean it's going to last. Because they went to the Justice of the Peace and they had a hot dog and a beer. And they were married for 51 years. And it wasn't until death did they part.
I can hardly talk. That's such a wonderful story. And I'm so glad you told it. Also, you know, February is Black History Month. So yes, we've been able to bring the two of those together.
Yes.
And I know this month has been a difficult one as we wrestle with what's the governor of Virginia doing. Yes. And I think one headline I saw said, well, he's partying like it's 1884. And
wow.
Yeah. And that's just such a beautiful story.
Thank
that
you.
Is,
thank you,
that
Mary.
Is history, that's love, and that's courage. And I'm going to eat a hot dog tomorrow and celebrate a wonderful yes. love story.
At a Shiner Bock.
Okay. So I want to thank Rob Hallett, Ruth and Jason Wentz, Rachel Chadwick, Sneha Desai, Eric Heen, and Kelly Kells for telling us these wonderful stories for Valentine's Day Part 2. And each of you, who's here? We still have everybody just about. I think Jason went home to take care of the kids. There's a 17-year-old in the family. I don't want to tell him what we did when we were that age and our parents were out. No, anyway, moving on. Just one by one, pick up a microphone and just say one word or one phrase of a feeling that these stories evoked in you. Shall we start over here with Eric?
Oh, Mary, love is in the air. Can you feel it?
Sneha.
I was very heartwarming, and some of the stories I had to fight tears because they were so heartwarming, cute, sad, happy all at once. It was beautiful.
Chocolate and hot dogs.
Persistence, I would say. That's the word. And passion.
Oh, okay, let's do Tatiana, Hank, Ruth's back there. Rob?
Well, they were heartwarming, touching, enlightening, courageous, loving, just everything. Very nice stories here that we had tonight.
They were really wonderful, and it reminds me that I need to wish my wife, Peggy, a wonderful Valentine's, because she's a pretty magnificent person.
Okay, Ruth, I think I see you. You can come up to a microphone.
I liked walking down memory lane and remembering the roller coaster of what it's like to be young and falling in love.
That is a roller coaster. Do
and
we
Kelly,
have anybody
you're
else?
Always going to? Last because I'm never going to follow one of your stories.
No.
It was a lot of fun to see hear the different stories and how everybody met, and it was just very heartwarming.
Okay, all together, wish those folks that you love out there a happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Yes. And do we have anybody to thank for keeping us on the air? What? No. We have given you our best, bared our souls and our hearts, and we are truly serious about needing your help to keep not just KPFT, but our show on the air.
We'll make it up next week.
Hey, and I understand if there are those secret admirers who send in the unsigned Valentine's card. You just go after the show to kpft.org in the middle of the night and just scroll down and make sure that you name us as the show to support. Okay, well, don't you dare move, because Lars is up next with a sweet mix of singer-songwriters on the Tennyson tapes. So make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? Treasure what you hear. Tonight was a true treasure trove of stories. Keep loving those stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. So this is Mary E., and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, and with all my guests, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Only one like you. There's no way he could have made two. Your love I'll keep forevermore. My first, my mind, my everything. So many things.